free agency is right around the corner, but first we're going to take one last look at what's left in Washington if and when Kirk Cousins returns, why Brandon Cooks might actually be worth a first rounder, plus we get back to a real mailbag, everything from Mike Glennon to tanking, to the possibility of seven-footers at receiver and a little bit of Radiohead. All that on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I'm here with Andy Benoit. This is going to be the first of, it's a veritable, like, worldwide tour we're doing with our schedule here, Andy. It's going to be show after show after show. We're getting off a little bit late this week, but we are also going to add a special show on Friday when free agency stuff is breaking. The early big stories in free agency, it's going to be probably 45 minutes of Andy and I yelling simultaneously about all the things that shocked us in the first hours of free agency, and then we'll be back with a regular, bigger, more expansive show on Monday. We're going to be busy.
We are. And for this show, we're going to do our very best to keep it a little broader so that it doesn't become outdated the second these guys start signing. So this is a wider encompassing football show for what we're doing here today.
There we go. Yeah, well, we got a couple topics up top here, and then we will have a mailbag, a decently sized mailbag, I think. We've been sort of shorting the mailbag a little bit during free agency, but we'll make up for that a little bit today. But let's start up top with what is still, after all these weeks, kind of the biggest story, the number one story, and that is Kirk Cousins and what will happen with the Washington Redskins, not only this offseason, but looking forward to next offseason. You know, Andy, you can disagree with me, but just sort of reading the tea leaves, what it sounds like is Cousins will probably be the Redskins quarterback in 2017. And then he will probably be leaving after that, and it will probably be going to San Francisco.
It's a lot of probablys, a lot of time between now and when that would happen. So we'll see. I think the focus, we ought to just keep it on this season, because if Cousins, let's say he goes and plays for Washington, let's say they go 12-4, he's not going to leave for San Francisco after that. They're not going to let that happen. So it's all conjecture to think about 2018, but as far as 2017 goes, Cousins is franchised. He's probably going to sign that. He'll play. The tricky part, Gary, is when will he sign it? Is he going to go right up to the last minute and make Washington deal without having a quarterback all offseason? Is he going to play hardball like that? Or will he take the money and then show up? And that's a decision that's going to have to be made. There's a lot of other stuff going on with this organization too, Gary. This is not the same franchise that it was at this time last year. They've lost both coordinators. Their GM's having personal issues again. The head coach is probably on the hot seat. And they've got a number of free agents that are leaving on offense, including Garcon and DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, and let's start there because, you know, when we talked about this Washington offense the last 18 months or so, It's good. It's got a lot of good personnel in it. DeSean Jackson was a very valuable piece. Pierre Garcon, even if he wasn't quite what he was when they originally signed him, was still an effective possession guy and catch and run guy. Those two veterans might be gone. It leaves them with Jordan Reed, very good. Jameson Crowder, very good slot receiver. Josh Doctson, last year's first round pick. None of those guys really bring the speed element that they would we're sort of assuming that Jackson and Garcon are going to be gone, but none of those guys I mentioned bring the speed element that Jackson brought to this offense.
They don't. And what Jackson and Garcon fit the offense and fit each other's style of play extremely well. And that's what made, they were not as productive as Reed and Jameson Crowder, but the way they were used and the way the designs were constructed, those guys, Jackson and Garcon, did a lot to help create the production of Reed and Crowder. Jackson lifts the defense horizontally and especially vertically. And Garcon is one of the better route runners in the NFL when it comes to in-breaking patterns. So slants, post routes, dig routes, anything that has him breaking towards the middle of the field. And those are the route combinations. They high-low defenders with that. One guy over the top, one guy underneath. They build crossing routes off of it. It's why I'm always marveling at how this offense is put together, Gary. You need route runners of that nature. And so it's not only that they're losing their starting receivers, it's the type of receivers that they're losing, because we don't know that neither of them might, they might not have either guy replaced. We don't know what Doxson is stylistically.
Yeah, I mean, look, Doxson at TCU, and no one really plays defense in the Big 12, so you don't read too deeply into it. You're sort of a downfield acrobat type of guy, but you know, he's bigger than Jackson, but he certainly doesn't bring that kind of speed. It's, you know, the run game looked better last year, so maybe they become a team that leans a little more on the ground game. You know, it'll be year three under Bill Callahan, if I remember correctly, and they've invested in an offensive line, and you know, Rob Kelly ended up being a nice upgrade over Matt Jones. Maybe they bring in another guy this offseason, maybe through the draft, and build through that. But, boy, I mean, even outside of Kirk Cousins, so many question marks on offense here.
And play action is such a big part of their offense, too, which I kind of view it as an extension of their running game. Mm-hmm. And when you go play action, your route running precision and timing is very important. And Doxson, who was not on the field as a rookie, I'm not confident that he'll have that kind of precision down. So I think this offense, without question, has taken a drastic step back this offseason. Personnel-wise, I think losing McVay will have some consequences. I think Gruden's a great coach, though. I would imagine he'll take the play calling back. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
Just too many questions for a team that really was, the last 2 years, they were competing for an NFC East crown.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, even last year, I mean, hey, if they beat a Giants team that had nothing to play for at home, they're
yep.
in the postseason. They're a wild card team. So,
Yeah. Sheesh,
we're not even getting to the defensive side of the ball with the Redskins yet. I'm sure we'll touch on that as the offseason moves on. But, man, it is getting a little bit hairy there in the nation's capital. Let's move on to a guy who's... This one's had me scratching my head a little bit, and we're going to talk about it for the first time. Brandon Cooks, reportedly on the trade market. I don't even know if it's reportedly anymore. I think Sean Payton just came out and said they are shopping him. I like Brandon Cooks. I think Brandon Cooks is a good player. But all the reports coming out are essentially saying the Saints think the return is going to be a mid-first-round pick. And I'm trying to, like, I'm trying to read between the lines and are people implying, are sources saying they want a package that includes a mid-first-round pick? Like you trade Cooks in a fourth-rounder for a mid-first-rounder or something like that? But it seems like, boy, that would be a lot to pay for a guy who, you know, he has 2 years left on his rookie deal, and then you're going to have to give him a monster extension, no matter what you think of the guy.
Yeah, that would be a lot to pay. And what he brings to the table is raw speed and raw quickness. And a lot of guys have one or the other, but they don't necessarily have both. We just talked about one of the guys in the NFL who does have both, DeSean Jackson, and how mm-hmm. valuable he is just to have on the field. He's inconsistent, but he presents a threat to you. That's the same thing on Cooks. And if he merely presents the threat, that alone influences the game and how you use him and how the defense plays. So there's a lot of value to be had there. He's not a great fit for the way the Saints play football. The Saints want to throw the ball between the field numbers. That's always been how they're designed. They are an inside passing team, and that's become even truer in recent years because Drew Brees' arm is without question in decline. And the wider you throw, the closer to the sideline, the further the throws become, the more arm strength you need. So Brees can still play, but they just have to play even a more committed brand of inside passing football. And Cooks, that's not really where his strong suits are. He's a guy you want to get the ball to on the perimeter, whether it's an end around or a deep shot over the top.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you sort of look at it. You look at it on paper, and, you know, obviously you have an all-time great quarterback in Drew Brees, and Cooks has just been a guy who has, you know, he had three big games last year. He had 300-yard games, and they were all 140 yards or more. And then he had, you know, he got shut out against the Rams at home in November. I mean, it's the world is made up of more than box score stats, but it's just tough to imagine someone paying that kind of price for this guy.
Well, yes and no. I think the reason he gets shut out, though, is because he does not innately fit their system. So unless they're going out of their way in designing specific plays for him, which they do, but it's hard to do that regularly. Unless they're doing that, he's going to run the risk of getting shut out or disappearing a little bit because he's just not their style of receiver. Now, they are the ones who drafted him, so clearly, and they knew what he was when they picked him, so clearly they have plans for how to use him. It just hasn't come to fruition, and you wonder a little bit if he's maybe easy to deal with, hard to deal with, what's that like behind the scenes. But, Gary, like we've heard New England, for example, offered a late first-round pick. You'd almost never see that from the Patriots. If that report is true, that's eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And Cooks in New England's system would be a big-time weapon, a game-changer, a difference-maker. So his value is very specific from team to team. Some teams are going to find him very valuable. Other teams, he's not going to be worth a second-round pick to. And it's just a matter of finding one of the teams that's be willing to deal. But anytime a guy is like that, now the market shrinks a little bit. So it's harder to move him because he's less valuable if he's not valuable to every single team.
Yeah. New Orleans Times Picayune had said five teams involved, three of them being the Titans, Patriots, and Eagles in what may or may not be a bidding war. I mean, obviously all this stuff is, if it gets leaked for a reason, but yeah.
And all those are teams, the Titans and Eagles are two teams that badly need
desperately
speed
need
at wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One more note before we rip open the mailbag, slightly bigger mailbag than we've been doing. Jermaine Gresham, 4-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals. He will not hit the open market here. I'm not a Jermaine Gresham guy, but the Cardinals apparently are. And who am I to tell Bruce Arians that he's not right on this?
Jermaine Gresham, I have heard more contrasting strong opinions about him within the NFL than maybe any other player. I've heard one coach who flat out called him, I thought it was kind of a funny term, it's not appropriate, but he called him a mental midget, a guy you just cannot rely on to rise to the occasion, drop passes at the wrong times, doesn't recover well from his mistakes. I heard another guy say he is a headliner in a receiving core because he's just an alpha male. He's a tone setter, and that's what you need. I know the Cardinals feel he's in that ladder. He's the tone setter for them. They like him in that regard. I think he's been very solid for them in what they've done. I'd have to see the money on this. I know it's 4 years. I haven't seen the money. Gresham's been a nice player. Remember, we talked, Gary, about his age. I kept thinking he's got to be near the end. Mm-hmm. He's right in his prime, though, and he plays like that. I think he's a solid, adequate NFL tight end.
All right. Adequate. Nice.
Yeah.
It's a good word.
Yeah.
The 10 Things Mailbag starts now.
Let's go ahead. Let's open the mailbag. Let's see what we can cover here. Once again, we will be doing the free agency special on Friday. I think we're shooting for like late morning or early afternoon Eastern time. Might be pushed back a little bit later if some late breaking stuff comes in Friday morning. And then we'll have the regular show again in your feed Monday morning. But mailbag, right now, we are working through a backlog of questions. We're going to have to do better going forward. We're going to have to be better at this, Andy. If you do have questions, keep sending them because we're going to get to as many as we possibly can as the offseason sort of soldiers on here. gGrambling_SI, Andy_Benoit. We are both on Facebook, or you can write talkback at themmqb.com. Just put podcast somewhere in your email so that it shows up when we search for it. But this first one is coming from Ian from Queens via talkback. Last few podcasts, we mentioned that in addition to rising quarterback salaries, tight ends seem next in line to start commanding more of the cap. Other commentators have mentioned kickers or slot corners being next up for similar pay bumps to compensate for their increased roles because of the salary cap. Which positions do you see taking the corresponding pay cuts? Or will salaries remain the same and teams will just carry fewer numbers of certain positions? I guess the one point to make is the salaries will naturally grow because the salary cap keeps on growing. And I think one position that obviously you see it more and more every year, and we've seen it early in the offseason here, is running back. Running backs just don't get paid the second contracts that other positions get.
They don't, and that's the last position you want to play, quite frankly, if you're entering the NFL. I've been waiting for tight ends to become more valuable. They're the lowest paid position. They're lower than offensive line, quarterback, wide receiver, and some of the top end running backs. So a very expensive running back is likelier to make more money than a very expensive tight end. So it's basically the lowest paid every down position on offense. And I understand it now because I had this conversation with a coach who does a very good job of using tight ends. So he really values them. This was last week at Indy at the Combine. And the point he made was that not every team knows how to use your tight ends. It's very stark from team to team. Some are great at it. You look at like the Packers and how they use Jared Cook, the Patriots, of course. The Chargers are very good with Gates and Henry. So some are good like that. And then other teams just don't, they just put them up on the line of scrimmage. They might flex them out once in a while, but they don't run their system through their tight end. They're not diverse like that. And so it's back to what we just said a little bit, like the Brandon Cooks market. If that's the case, then that means there's a market for tight ends, but it's innately smaller because less teams are involved in it. And that's what keeps the price down. There just aren't enough teams out there that are capable of using the tight end to bid the number up. So the teams that like tight ends, they're very, very valuable to them, the tight end is. But there aren't enough teams like that that know how to use them.
That's very interesting. I was also wondering if it was a thing, because you see a guy like Cook, and Cook's not a guy... So we talk about the chess piece guys, and the value of the chess piece guys is, one of the things is they'll help reveal a defense's coverage. That guy doesn't necessarily have to be tremendously skilled. He can still be that raw size speed type of guy that would just be a potential mismatch problem. And maybe that's why those guys don't necessarily get paid, because you're not necessarily looking for production. Does that make sense? Does that make any sense?
It doesn't. That's another conversation I had, I think it was with a different coach, exactly what you just said. And I asked, and that's why I like talking to the coaches, because they're the ones that have to game plan with these guys. So we can sit here and analyze them, and we might be right, but we've never had to go in before a game and think, how do I win or lose with this? You get a different kind of approach when you really think of it that way. And the guys that have to game plan with the tight ends, they've told me there is a world of difference in what you get and what you're comfortable doing when you have a dynamic athletic one out there versus just a sort of athletic one. It's a fine line between what the defense will respect and not respect, and it mainly pertains to when you align the tight end by himself on the back side of the formation. So think of all the receivers lined up to the right and the tight end kind of flexed to the left. Carolina does it with Greg Olsen a lot. Seattle does it with Jimmy Graham a ton. That's what we're talking about. That's what the position has become, and that formation, which is the most common one on third down in the NFL now, at least third and meaningful distance to go, that's where tight ends are most important, and that's why some teams that's where some teams haven't learned how to use them yet.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I was surprised by a lot of that, because I kind of thought that too. Like, well, the reason people like tight ends when they're scheming is because if you put him out wide by himself, the defense is almost forced to reveal whether they are in man or zone coverage. If they're in man coverage, then there's going to be a safety out across from that tight end. That's who guards tight ends traditionally. Mm-hmm. If they're in zone coverage, it's going to be a corner out there, because that's where the corner normally lines up, and they don't man the corner up on the tight end. So you know the corner's out there in his zone. It's that simple. The quarterback gets his information, and now he plays. So I was thinking, well, you could just line up any old tight end out there and get the information. And that's true to an extent, but there's so much more that happens after that determines where the tight end's value comes from. If you have a guy that can still play out there, there's more information still that you can get from the defense.
Yeah. Next question here is coming from Ben Heisler on Twitter, at Benny Heis. Who would have to tell you on the record that Mike Glennon is worth $14 to $15 million a year for you to genuinely believe them? I mean, this is going to be the signing that's most mocked.
It's a bit of a leading question there, isn't it, from our guy Benny
It's
Ice?
A very leading question. There's a, well, I'd make this point, and $14 to $15 million a year, that means on your second contract for a quarterback, that means you're like the 30th best starter in the NFL. Like that's a bottom of the barrel starter, which is, I guess that's what Glennon would be. I mean, the alternative is you draft a guy and hope you get a serviceable guy, and you end up paying him, you know, whatever. Dak Prescott makes like $700,000 a year or something like that.
The problem is there aren't enough guys like that ready to play right away. There are people saying that this year's draft has zero guys who are ready to play quarterback in the NFL in 2017. And there's going to be a lot of head coaches who know they're going to get fired if they don't play well in 2017. And so that's where a guy like Mike Glennon seems a little more enticing. And for a few extra million bucks, the GM, who also feels like he might be getting fired, I think they'll do that. I think someone will do that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I really don't mind Mike Glennon on a contract similar to Osweiler's, where you can get out. I mean, Osweiler's basically on a 2-year deal. You can say $72 million. It's going to be $36 million over 2 years. Which, I mean, look, the way he played, it's a terrible contract. But if you think, you know, Mike Glennon is a passable NFL starter, that's reasonable. If you end up paying him, you know, $30 to $35 million over a 2-year span.
We just haven't seen him recently. That's the concerning part. That's not concern. I mean, it's concerning, but it's the complicating factor. He hasn't been on the field, so we don't know what he is. The Buccaneers really like him. I know that for certain. But they didn't like him enough to not take Jameis Winston and build around him. So it's some team that has a run-oriented approach will probably sign Glennon and plug him in and try to win through the scheme with him.
Yep. Next one, we're coming off the combine, so let's get a combine question here. This is Stuart Rance via Facebook. When it comes to the combine, wondering the levels of importance of each event, each section. Interviews appear the most interesting and important, but guys are so polished for them now. Surely tape is ranked higher, but what do teams look for? And Stuart also mentions he would like you, Andy, to listen to Radiohead or Pink Floyd, perhaps, for your next music review. If Appetite for Destruction was too out there for you, I think Radiohead is gonna maybe melt your brain a little bit. But
brain melted?
I have.
Rock
well,
music?
No, Radiohead is much more experimental with what they do, and
I don't know what that means. I don't know what does that mean that's going to sound like?
It will not sound like any genre of music you have listened to.
I'll say that. All right. I'm almost going to have to do Radiohead because I just have like no clue what anyone's talking about right now. I can't even try to put myself in those shoes.
You can listen to... They got there gradually. So it's kind of like if you started with... whatever, Pablo Honey, when they were just sort of a regular rock group, and then they sort of went and they got sort of stranger and stranger and sort of further away from center. But yeah, we'll maybe drop you right in the middle of that. And I owe you, I have Zac Brown Band queued up. I'm going to give a listen and give my review on that.
Okay.
So we're all even here.
All right.
So anyway,
we're talking
the combine
stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I hear mixed reviews on that. So the interviews are the thing that stands out. That's what teams really value because that's what you can't get from the film.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, this our questioner here is Pablo. Is that it?
No, Stuart.
No. What,
Stuart.
Stuart.
Pablo
Why,
Honey was the name
Pablo?
Of the first
okay,
Radiohead.
Okay, that's what you just said. Pablo Honey Radiohead. All right, so this Radiohead guy, Stuart, makes the point about the interviews. Stewart's point that the guys are so polished for the interviews, the teams know that, and a lot of them are dismissive of the interviews because of that. But I have heard coaches sit down and say, no, but I've got the perfect formula for what to ask these guys, and if they answer this way, I know they mean this and that, and they think they're psychologists. The part we have to remember is these are professional football coaches. These are not detectives. They're not psychologists. They're not psychoanalysts. So they don't really know what they're doing here. They might interview a guy, yeah, and he might give an answer, and the answer might strike him as good or bad, but that doesn't mean that they actually are interpreting what's going on. So a lot of teams just don't do – someone made the point they ought to hire former FBI interrogators to do these kind of questions. Why would you do that? Why would you not hire that guy and instead choose to use your director of scouting personnel as the guy in the meeting room with them?
Yeah.
The whole process is hard to figure out, and teams are—they're not as tight and put together with it as you would imagine. I don't think they're as organized here and as forward-thinking as a lot of people might guess.
Yeah, Jenny Vrentas, by the way, last year's combine, sat in on an interview with a quarterback prospect in the Miami Dolphins. And if you want a little more insight into what goes on there, that's maybe something worth checking out. As far as the testing goes, and this is how it's been explained to me, is basically you have a range of acceptable times or reps or whatever you want to call it, like acceptable 40 times. If you're out of that range, you'll disappear from boards. And the only other thing is, if you have a guy on tape who your scouting department has said, he's slow and then he runs a 4.35, or maybe they think he's fast and then he runs a 4.6. That might be something where they go back and review the tape with sort of fresh minds. But
and when they do that, they need to be watching the tape to see, okay, runs a 4.5, but what does he run when he has to be thinking and he's got all his pads and his helmet on and he's maybe having to come from a different direction initially? Then what does mm-hmm. he run? Because that's a whole different type of speed, and some guys have it and some guys do not.
That is true. That is very true. Next one is coming again via Facebook. This is Joseph Conroy. Why don't teams well below the cap trade for players on short-term overpriced contracts that teams want to get rid of, i.e. Brock Osweiler, in exchange for mid to late round picks, or alternatively restructure the deals of current stars so they are paid more now and less in the future to give themselves greater flexibility going forward? I think the easiest way to explain, and probably the simplest and possibly oversimplified way to explain the trade rules in the NFL, when you trade a guy, it's the same thing as if you released a guy. So if the Texans traded Brock Osweiler, they would take the massive cap hit that they would have taken if they release him, which would be whatever it would be, probably close to $20 million with the small guarantees left on his deal going forward. So that's why you can't really do salary dump trades in the NFL. You have to find a partner who has a similar contract so that you both can swing that deal.
That's a great point. That's the answer to the question. There's also an ancillary answer, and that is if the team the guy's on isn't willing to pay him that much, then other teams are not either. So let's make an example. The Adrian Peterson situation. He was due $18 million in Minnesota. The Vikings say, hey, we love you, but you're not worth $18 million. We're going to let you go. If they were to have called another team, the Giants or somebody, who I think Peterson would fit well with, and say, hey, you want Adrian Peterson, the Giants would say, well, he's not worth $18 million to us either. Why would we do that? If you're going to release him anyway, we'll just go and sign him on the open market for $10 million, $12 million, whatever it is. Guys are not going to become more expensive after they're just flat-out released if the reason they're released is for cap purposes. That just doesn't happen. If it's something else, if it's a Greg Hardy type situation where you wonder what's the guy really about, mm-hmm. then maybe his number would go up. Even that's highly unlikely, though. Guys that get released, they don't become more expensive at the next stop because they got released for a reason.
Yeah, but basically the NFL rules prevent, if you were the Cleveland Browns or the San Francisco 49ers right now, a team that's in clear rebuild mode, you can't just go around and say, give me all your crap guys and package them with third-round picks, and we will take them off your hands and let their deals expire and do it like that. This is this is not the NBA or something. MLB is probably more guilty of that. No, NBA is probably more guilty because everyone wants the expiring deals so that they can get the cap space the upcoming offseason, and that's what the trade deadline is all about.
Yeah, you don't really hear about that's why you never hear expiring contract in the NFL, that term, that phrase.
Yeah.
Because there's no value to it. Nobody's out trying to acquire expiring contracts? That's a good question. I'm glad we went over this point, because my guess is not a lot of people knew this one, and I hadn't honestly, Gary, thought about the trade aspect of it and what you put out there too. So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, yeah. Next question is coming from Twitter. This is Tony Wright Jr. at Mason_912. What different traits are needed for a press corner in comparison to a corner who excels in zone or off coverage?
Well, a lot of the press stuff has to do with his body style, his build, how thick is he up top, how long are his arms, and then does he transition well? So part B, then, what kind of hips does he have? How quick are his feet? And if he's very quick and has nice hips, then he can be in off coverage because he can transition well and react accordingly. If he's a little slower there, like Richard Sherman, for example, is not very quick in the twitch in that part of him, then you want to have the A to press coverage because that slows the receiver down. Now they're playing on the cornerback's timing a little bit more. So it comes down to what style of player are you, what kind of body you have. And almost always the long, lanky guys, those are the press guys. And the smaller, quicker-looking guys, those are going to be the off-coverage guys. It's not always that, but that's a pretty that's not a bad model to follow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the one I shouldn't say the one exception. There are multiple exceptions, but the one most maybe most prominent exception we talked about last show, that was Trumaine Johnson.
Yeah, he's a little bit of both. He's an interesting guy, and that's. That's why he got franchise tag a second year in a row, and there's rumors that maybe the Rams are trying to trade him. You know, we'll see how that goes. I would think they would want to keep him, though, especially with Wade Phillips and what he does with his third down pressure designs, and maybe he doesn't feel he has to do that as much here because he's got Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn, but he did them with Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, so I would imagine he'll keep doing them. But if you go third down pressure, you want to play man coverage behind it because the idea for blitzing them, the idea is, okay, we blitz them. That means they're going to have to throw quicker. Well, if they throw quicker, you want the defender right up on the receiver to be able to defend that throw. You don't want them in off coverage.
Well, this next question is actually, I like this question. This is going to be sort of along the same terms here. This is Lorenzo via Talkback. Why don't football teams try to take someone who is 7 feet tall, like a basketball center, play him at tight end, and send him in there just for post-ups in the red zone? QB lobs the ball up where no one else can get it.
There's a quick, easy answer to this.
It's functional movement skills, if you're 7 feet tall, aren't ideal for football.
They're not. Here's what would happen. You line the tight end, the 7-footer, up on the line of scrimmage. He probably has to start a yard back because he's so tall. And as soon as the ball snapped, somebody will jam him. Now it's going to be a 6-foot dude who weighs 250. It's not going to matter because the guy is going to be near his legs, and that throws off the timing of it, and that 7-footer is not going to get through the jam very well. And so maybe he could make his way to the end zone, but your quarterback's probably been sacked a few seconds ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. I don't think it's not a stupid question.
I like that thinking.
Yeah, no, I do too. And sometimes you have to ask, I always ask those kind of extreme questions to coaches. One of the questions I always ask coaches is, why don't you run that play every single snap? And that seems, oh, it's ridiculous. Why would you run any play every single snap? But when they answer it, they have to tell you what they don't like about the play. So that's not a dumb question. Why don't you just line a 7-footer up and throw to them? But that's the reason why. And now we're talking about how important it is that line of scrimmage tight ends and really any player be able to get off on the jam, beat press coverage.
What if you had like a trips formation, you put him behind that?
So he's protected coming off the line?
Yeah. That's what I'm going to do with
question.
My
7-footer. Yeah. Yeah.
I just found a role for, I don't know, George Mirazon in the NFL.
Yeah, that could probably work. The one thing then is, the types of routes a 7-footer could catch would probably be fade balls and jump balls, which are really just poorly thrown fade balls. So fade balls. You don't see a lot of fade balls thrown to guys who aren't up on the line of scrimmage. And my guess is the reason why is the geometry doesn't sync up well, and it probably complicates with other routes you would run. So you say he's in a trips, what happens to the other routes around him? And maybe the answer is, well, it doesn't matter. We're still thrown to the 7-footer no matter what. All right, so then it's the question then is, okay, let's say that works. Now, is all of this worth a whole roster spot? Because you're not doing this every snap.
My team in Hartford is. My expansion
team.
No, I had a friend who's 6'4" I used to work with. He's 6'4", and he would never join our office basketball team, and I will never forgive him for it. But he used to always say, he's like, I'm 6'4", I'm going to open a camp for 6'4" people and teach them how to be defensive backs, to be cornerbacks. And I just sort of told him, you know, if you're 6'4", you're sacrificing, you got that high center of gravity, you're sacrificing that sort of quick change of direction ability. That's just how, you know, that's the price you pay for being 6'4". That's just how the body type works.
You've got
nature.
More body to change directions with, so you're lugging a heavier, more awkward load. I know Eric Berry a few years ago, people don't remember this, but he could not play man coverage. They would line him up on the tight end and he'd get thrown at, and that was an Achilles heel for Kansas City's defense. After that season, I want to say this was the 2013 season, so end of the 2014 season, I could be off a year, but, you know, bear with me. The very next year, he was all of a sudden excellent in man coverage, one of the best there was. And what he had done in the offseason was gone back to a friend of his who I think is 6'7", something like that, a basketball-playing friend, and he played against him all summer long. He just played defense on the 6'7 guy. That 6'7 guy had an enormous advantage, and Berry figured out how to work around it. So there is some value to these bigger guys, and if you do have to learn how to defend them. Berry couldn't do that for the longest time. Berry would have really struggled against a 7-foot tight end in an NFL game, I guess. But it's, you know, this is what people talk about. This is what front offices have to sit around and figure out and talk about, because there are 7-foot athletes out there. We see them in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is the, we'll get one more question here. This is from Tim Peterson from Brooklyn via TalkBack. And I'm sorry, Tim, I'm going to cut this down a little bit just for the sake of brevity, but he asks a much more, much more nuanced question. This, basically he's saying he's a Jets fan and he wants the Jets to go Sam Hinkie style process, tear it down and tank. And in the hopes of getting Sam Darnold is the darling of the 2018 draft class. Josh Rosen's a good one too. Next year's quarterbacks, they're guys who come from pro systems. They're, you know, in theory going to be better, but as we see every year, the more tape that comes out on you, the more flaws people will pick out. But yeah, he's basically saying, why don't the Jets just do what the 76ers did, throw Petty or Hackenberg out there this year, go 0-16, 1-15, whatever, get the number one pick, get one of those quarterbacks and rebuild that way. I've always kind of wondered that, especially in the lead up to the Andrew Luck draft, because the Andrew Luck draft, I might be wrong on this, but I think I'm right. Andrew Luck draft was the first one with the new rookie scale. So it used to be back in the day, yeah, you might have the number one pick, but you have to pay an enormous contract. You have to pay a franchise player contract to Jamarcus Russell or, you know, Well, if you get someone better than Jamarcus Russell, you still got to pay that person, Sam Bradford, something like that. Whereas now, you know, the number one pick is on what is, you know, if you get a franchise quarterback with the number one pick, he's on a very team-friendly deal for the first 5 years of his career.
Yeah, it was a 2011 season, I think, because I remember Cam Newton did not get a huge mega deal.
Was it Cam was the first one?
Yeah. And that was the year the lockout happened. So that must, you know, they solved that in the lockout. But the issues in the NBA, it's five guys are on the court, 12 guys are on the team, and the nature of the game is such that because there's so few players, if you have a dominant one or two guys, that's who you are. That's what it's built. In the NFL, one or two guys cannot carry a team. You still have to play with the other 10 or 9 guys. And so you're going to sell the locker room on the idea of, hey, we're going to tank for next year. And what that locker room is going to think is, like, hell we are. I'm going to go out and risk my health, which every NFL guy does, and at a much riskier level than any NBA guy does, and for a lot less money, not guaranteed money. You want me to go out on that kind of a contract and lose. And then you're going to, if we're tanking, that means you're going to get rid of half of us. And then the half who stick around probably don't respect the coaching staff for what happened the year before. There's just too much of an emotional element to it to deal with. The 76ers can tank and then overhaul their team much easier than an NFL team can. And you don't want to breed losing into guys. We got to keep in mind, these are still human beings out there, and they're not robots. And if they lose a bunch and you become losers and you did it on purpose, that's a hard thing to reshape. I don't see that. You're not going to just build a new weight room and all of a sudden we change the culture after that.
Yeah. No, I think that's the big point. In the NBA, you can literally bring in an all-new roster year to year if you really want to. You can bring in 15 new guys, along with your draft picks, kind of like what the 76ers tried to do. And if Sam Hinkie wasn't so bad at drafting players, it might have worked in a lot shorter order than it might work in the long run here. But yeah, that's kind of it. You're going to be bringing back half of those guys, and you just sort of went out and kind of ruined them for a year. I mean, nothing positive can come out of that. And now you're going to drop one player in. You're going to drop, let's say you drop Sam Darnold in there. If Sam Darnold is Andrew Luck, how good is your team now? You probably have a 6-10 team, and you probably have a team that'll hover around 6-10 until you finish rebuilding the roster. Can you get free agents to come in and join your team after what you did? A lot more variables.
There's a happy medium to be had. The 49ers last season, they didn't know that Chip Kelly was going to be fired after 1 year, because nobody does that, but that's what happened. But they didn't know that, so they did play their young guys a little more than they would have, and they did try some different things and look more in the long haul of things. Keep in mind, if you're tanking, you're not developing your young players fully, so it's not a matter of just plugging in the quarterback and now we go. Your team's not as good as it would have been, even if you'd tried hard and lost 13 games. But teams can find the happy medium. You still want to compete. But the answer would be to compete and play younger players with a purpose. It wouldn't be to just lose the games.
Yeah.
And maybe someone would say that's what the Sixers were doing. They were, maybe they'd say that. I don't know.
Well, I guess the other point to make is, you don't necessarily tell the players, like, we're trying to lose here. It's not like the movie Major League. You build a roster that's going to lose. I mean, that's what the Sixers did, and all the players said, oh, we're not tanking. Well, your front office is tanking.
Right, it's not you, yeah. Right,
like, you're trying to win. They just know you're not good enough to win in this league. So,
well, you can't overhaul. So then it's back to the simple answer. NFL team, you can't rebuild the entire roster in 1 to 2 years, in theory. In actuality, you can't, and then in theory, you could in the NBA. You could overhaul a 12, 13-man roster in 1 or 2 years.
Yeah. Andy, that's a show. We're going to be right back Friday, though. Friday, look for it around noon Eastern time, I think. That's a good estimate. We'll sort of keep an eye on what's going down in the free agent world Friday morning, but we will have the free agency sort of rapid react special on Friday to make up for the fact that you had to wait a little bit longer for this one. And then we will have the full free agency blowout in your feed Monday, regular show. Thank you, as always, for sending the questions. Send more questions, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. We're both on Facebook, or write to talkback@themmqb.com. Thank you to producer Matt Havia is back. Also, editor Chris Basil turning this thing around on short order, making us sound really good. All the guys at Digital Media, always just tremendous for us. Most of all, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Send your questions, send your feedback, send your constructive criticism. We want to hear it all. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Friday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.